Give me your clothes, your butts, and your censorship algorithm. That's a nice one, Callum Oxworth. Nice reference to the Terminator. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? The Twitter deal is over, at least as declared by Elon Musk. The Twitter deal has been abandoned. That is a special news. However, before we dig into the news, I have a collector's item which I'm about to consume here. Pepsi Crystal. Wow. A bottle from 1994. A commercial flop, but my family has been keeping a reserve of Pepsi Crystal as collector's item. This bottle is about 30 years old, from 1994. So yeah, about 30 years old, 28 years old. The Pepsi Crystal has been refrigerated, and this is worth about $2,500 on the market, but my family has been generous enough to give it to me. Let's open it, see if there's still gas in it. Go away says, don't do it, JF. Imagine the microplastic. It doesn't smell like regular Pepsi. Is it supposed to taste different? It's hard to tell. Is it supposed to taste like regular Pepsi? It's like I suddenly don't remember what is the taste of diet of regular Pepsi. I think it tastes pretty. By the way, I was kidding. It's not an old bottle from 1994. It's just that in Canada somehow they started selling those again. I was just kidding. It is not a bottle from 1994. It's just a bottle that has adopted the classical style, but it's a recent bottle. So I don't know. I can understand why people wouldn't buy this, because it wrecks my mind. I don't even know. Is that the taste of regular Pepsi? Because I experienced it a little bit like the taste of Sprite. And yet, I know that the chemical constitution should be basically the same as regular Pepsi. I am absolutely confused. But there is sodium citrate in it. So that would mean that's probably what gives it the Sprite taste. But is there also sodium citrate in the regular Pepsi? I don't know. This is such an uncomfortable experience. I wouldn't buy this. I just bought it for the show because I thought you guys would enjoy. It wrecks my mind, the fact that it's transparent. It totally breaks me. Pineapple Platypotamus says he terminated the deal. Yes, Elon Musk has terminated the deal. His reason is that he says he doesn't get the information he wants about the bots, which is necessary to consume the transaction, because to solicit loans and to solicit financing for the transaction, he needs bot information so he can give guarantees to the people sending him money. So a lot of people have been pointing out that he had waived his right to due diligence. That's one thing. But if he's arguing that he needs the bot information not for due diligence purposes, but for the purpose of soliciting funds, then I think he is well grounded in law. And I think there will not be a big punishment for him in court, or there will be at least enough uncertainty about the punishment that it's possible Twitter will not even pursue a lawsuit, because the fact is he outplayed Twitter here, because if he had made this letter at the very beginning of the deal, he might be in trouble. But he's waited many months and he's let the occasion for Twitter to respond and to send their bot information. So in a way, by doing so, Twitter has acknowledged that there was a legitimate reason to send bot information. So they cannot then go in court and say, no, this is totally unrelated and he has waived his right to due diligence. If you believe that he had waived his right to due diligence, then you wouldn't have given him partial bot information. But now Elon Musk is complaining that the information is too partial, that he didn't receive the methodology information on how Twitter evaluates bots. By the way, Twitter is terrible at evaluating what's a bot and what's not. Apparently, I'm banned because I'm a bot. And here I am, a human being, doing a show every day with my human voice and human appearance. So Twitter doesn't know what they're doing in terms of bot evaluation. But yes, Sigidam Sengis says $44 billion was always an absolutely ridiculous sum. It was just a meme from the start. Yes, and that meme was kind of possible at the peak of the stock market, but with everything losing value, it was much more hurtful. This joke of Elon Musk was much more costly by the day because the value of what he holds was diminishing, is diminishing still on an everyday basis. So I don't know what will happen. Some people are saying that very often these initial letters of disengagement are actually just a leverage. So they say very often they will go to the court, they will start a legal case, like Twitter will start a legal case against Elon Musk, and then they will negotiate on the table and they will come to an arranged deal at lower price. They were saying on Zero Hedge that very often the lawsuit starts, and then the guy who wanted to buy gets it for two-thirds of the initial price that he had initially bid. So you could very well have Elon Musk buy Twitter at $33 billion rather than $44. It could be what happens. I don't know, but it's quite fascinating, and it will be quite fascinating to follow. But as I indicated yesterday, I kind of felt that this was coming yesterday. And that's why I predicted yesterday that the deal was much less likely to occur. And I said it's better that way because Elon Musk doesn't seem to be determined to live by his words. His words were, if it's legal, you leave it on there. There are so many things legal, Elon Musk, you have no idea. Some of these things you would want to ban them yourself. John Jay has sent a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, Jeff, they say that white people have 4% Neanderthal DNA, but what exactly does that mean? Don't we share 50% of our DNA with a banana? Yes, we do. When we talk of sharing 2 to 4% of Neanderthal DNA, what we mean is segments of DNA that are closer to Neanderthal than they are to humans today. So much so that we can tell, even if there's a mutation or two, that it's basically a copy of the Neanderthal gene. So it's very different from evaluating these percentages from evaluating the percentage that we share with a banana. Because when we say we share 50% of our genes with a banana, what they mean is letter by letter. Just like we take the ribosome gene, which every living things except viruses have a ribosome gene. So the ribosome gene, it has X number of letters of DNA, and there are many genes really, but if you take the whole thing, you're going to have a number of letters of DNA. The question is, how many correspondence can you find with the banana to say, okay, this letter we share it with the banana, this letter we don't share it with the banana. That's a letter by letter analysis. When we say white people share DNA from Neanderthal, we mean entire segments of DNA that are exactly the same or that are so close that we must invoke some ancestry relationship. It's very different because if we were to count letter by letter, we would be much more than 4% of Neanderthal DNA. We would be basically 95, 97, 99%, somewhere in there. So what we mean is conserved segments in full. That's why the percentage comes out very different. Mark says, JF, wasn't there a steep price for canceling the contract? Well, Elon Musk has committed to a... this Pepsi Crystal is refreshing and interesting. I feel like I need it. I didn't want it anymore. I enjoy it now. I'm getting used to it. Elon Musk had put a $1 billion sum of commitment. But for that $1 billion sum to be obtained by Twitter, they must argue that they have respected all of their commitment on their side of the contract, and that Elon Musk has not respected his commitments. So that would all be an argument in court, and I would be surprised that they would get any money before they get it into the court and perhaps reach a deal with Elon Musk. Perhaps Elon Musk can say, all right, you know what, take $1 million, take $10 million. But if they want $1 billion, they're going to have to fight for it in court, and it's not a guaranteed win. John Jay has sent another super chat. He says, follow-up question. Based on that answer, who's to say that we aren't Neanderthals that have X amount of Homo sapiens DNA? Well, that's a relative question. You can very well have this view, and there's nothing wrong with this view. Like, who's to say that we're not salamanders with an extra part of the genome that is non-salamander? Well, we are in a way. We are. Just like this is explained by Brett Weinstein in his book with his wife, Heather Heyer, where they say, you are a monkey, you are a salamander, you are a fish, and then you are an invertebrate, and then you are a bacteria. You are all of these things with something else that has shown, but that's something else. You are just as much a descendant of the original salamanders as the salamanders of today. Like, they don't belong more to the group than you. You belong as much to the group that includes salamander as the salamanders themselves. So you can see it that way, and seen that way, really, the right way to see it, and that's how we learn in biology in terms of understanding ourselves as umbrellas under a common ancestor. There's nothing wrong with the view you said. However, because that fragment of DNA is only 4%, you would think that 96% has a more weighty representation to be considered, and therefore, we're not committing an error either by saying we're something else. We evolved into something distinguishable. In fact, that's the criterion in biology. If you can distinguish, it's something else. So even in the species where there's merely a change of skin color, we will define subspecies and we will say, okay, that's a different subpopulation at the very least, if not a subspecies. So We could very well do that with the Neanderthals. Robert Paulson has sent a super chat on entropy. He says, trying to keep your mind on the fight with sticks like the old man who yells at Rocky, how would you steel man sticks pro-abortion argument? How do you think he will try to counter your argument? My God, you are in advance, because the debate has been scheduled, I believe. I just want to give you the right and okay. Sticks debate will be on the 13th at 9 a.m. Eastern time. I'm gonna have to wake up early. 9 a.m. Eastern time. Sticks debate on Wednesday the 13th. typically the kind of thinking you present here, Robert, I do it on the day before, very often, just the day before a debate. So how would I Steelman Sticks pro-abortion argument? I think that Sticks will come with a liberty-based conception, and he will say, and that would be the Steelman, the government has nothing to do with a medical decision. And you should believe this too, JF, since you're a libertarian. So that will be his angle, I guess. And how do you think he will try to counter your argument? Well, my argument to it against this will be to say, well, first, there is no constitutional right to determine one's medical decision. Medical decisions are not mentioned in the United States Constitution. And as much as I would be interested in them being listed, they're not. So as far as Roe v. Wade is concerned, I think they've done the right decision. If you want medical rights in America, first stop forcing the vaccine onto people. Secondly, if you want those medical rights, confirm it in the Constitution. It's unbelievable that our political system is so dysfunctional that we can't have a basic recognition of the liberty of one's own body in the Constitution. But that's the current state. Now, even if we had a constitutional amendment that guarantees individual decision-making in the domain of medicine, it would remain the case to me that abortion is not an individual medical decision. Abortion is a service through which the promise of sex and the promise of birth is broken toward a male who was promised this. He may not have been promised this explicitly, but all of his nature, all of his genes are telling him, yes, you've come in a woman. You will have a baby, or you might have a baby. So to me, it is the responsibility of a well-ordered society to decide how are we going to articulate the different rights here. There's the rights of the baby who will come to exist. There's the rights of the father who was represented as being potentially the father of a future life and who has invested effort in it. Effort in the sense of getting rid of some functional sperm that could have been invested elsewhere instead. All of these are parameters of a contract. A contract linking three different people. And it should be the responsibility of a society to decide how will we enforce the various interests in this contract. The same way when we have the state coming in and telling a business, you've signed contract X, and in contract X you commit to 1, 2, 3. If they haven't performed number 2, number 3, or whatever, the state will come and say, no, you have to perform it. Or if you don't, we will punish you financially for it. Is that the state obstructing on liberty? I mean, a company could say, hey, it's my liberty to not respect condition 2. And the fact is that a well-ordered European society is based on contractual engagements and respecting these engagements. If you don't have respect of engagement, then you have anarchy. And this is not an impediment on liberty. In fact, it's something that helps liberty happen and helps liberty be productive. Because if you had so much liberty that even your words in a contract are worth nothing, then contracts become uninteresting, and therefore no one respects their own commitment, and you can't trust anyone in the commerce, and you can't make deals in advance with people. Now, a society can very well decide The parameters of human reproduction are very much like a contract, and there is a promise, there is an expectation, and there are different interests to take into account, not even just those of the two parents, but those of the doctor and those of the baby. And a society can very well decide there are certain things that we will not let happen. In the same way, we will not let a corporation just violate its own dictates and its own commitments without punishment. We will not let a woman violate her own promises through the giving of sex, the promise of a baby. We will not let her disengage from this promise at zero cost. In fact, in some cases, we will not let her at all disengage from this promise. So the way, I don't know how he will respond to this. Perhaps he will try to question the conception of contractualism that I'm laying out and say this doesn't apply to the sexual market. And to that I will say, well, I think it's a reasonable interpretation that such a conception of promise actually pre-existed advanced societies. That basically cavemen, when they were having sex with a woman, they were interpreting it as a promise of a potential baby. And I think it's good that we integrate this prehistoric fact to modern society with the legal tools of modern society. Silver Spider says, Jeff, what if Styx brings up a situation when the man leaves? Oh, I would like him to do that error because I believe that the presence of contracts actually improves decision making on the side of all parties. If you claim that there is an implicit contract in sex and that sex has the purpose of making babies, and not only you claim this, but you tell women and you educate women about the fact that there will be no way back. We will not allow you to get an abortion. They are much more likely to make proper decision making and not fucking around with any guy they find. They're much more likely to be considering very heavily, do I have a man of quality here? So basically, the Roe v. Wade regime has been incentivizing poor female decision making. And I believe that the abolishment of Roe v. Wade will lead to a renaissance of quality female decision-making. They will have to think twice before they get inseminated. And the fact is, they should. And we would be a better society if they would. Because in this polygamous, like, crap of a society that Roe v. Wade has led to, unfortunately, the way to reproduce is basically to get a woman to get interested in you and then to be stupid enough not to know how to put a condom on and to be disorganized enough for a woman to forget her birth pill. That's basically how you reproduce in 2020. Not in 2022 because Roe v. Wade has been abolished, but under the Roe v. Wade regime, you have a dysgenic pressure for poor decision-making on all sides because basically the only ones who are making it to the next generation are the low IQs who are, they're just following their instincts and, oh my God, I'm getting fucked by this guy tonight and this other guy next night. And ultimately it's down to random and in fact down to the accidental nature of the condom breaching or the person being too instinctive and too quick to even think about putting a condom. That's the kind of low-level, low-IQ behavior that Roe v. Wade farms. And that's a sad state of things. There used to be religious counseling available and social and cultural counseling available that were telling women, be careful with the decision you take, because it's going to impact all your life. The problem is we've created a world in which the decision doesn't impact their lives, because even if the guy is a deadbeat who runs away, the state is going to care for the baby. And so, and the state is in fact going to suggest an abortion and make it very much available. So I think I have a good angle there, because I think people can very well instinctively be charmed by this aspect that we've forgotten, that there used to be in this society, there used to be an intentional burden put on sex. Not that puts sex at the bottom, but that elevates sex, that says this is something important. You're going to do it only if you're sure, because there are superb consequences for you that are beautiful if everything works well, but that can be terrible if you make the wrong decision. We are in a better world when that decision has its terrible consequences at the right time. The entirety, anyways, of Roe v. Wade has been an enterprise to begin special rights for females. Because in this society, males have no one to protect their my body, my choice. No one claimed that on the left when workers, male workers, were being asked to get the vaccine or to lose their license and to be unable to practice the trades that they've been practicing for decades. No one is misinterpreting the Constitution creatively to save men from their body being violated. And so let us bring women down with us, and perhaps in a far distant future, we can get back to mutual respect between men and female, and we can get everyone to agree on the conception of my body, my choice, which hopefully would apply to the vaccine first and foremost. And as far as it applying then to abortion, still there will be a problem, because the fact is the baby is not in the female's body. That's a false statement. If you draw the body of a female and you draw all of her skin, like a stick figure or something, let's draw a stick figure of a woman. So you are outside the body when you're on the side of her hips, right? And then you attain her foot and you're still outside the body. And then you attain her inner thigh and you're still outside the body. And then you draw a vagina and you're still outside the body. There's a cavity there and it's outside the body. The same way our mouth are outside our bodies. The same way the stomach, by the way, for biologists is considered to be an external container. Because you have something that separates your body from the content of your stomach. So what's in your stomach is not, although it's inside a cavity of yours, that cavity is the exterior of your body. So you continue to draw the uterus and you'll realize that the only place you close, the only place in which you get in the body of the woman, is actually above the baby. And that the baby is plugged to the body of the woman, but that the baby is external to the skin of the uterus and the skin of the vagina and the skin of the legs. So the baby is basically contained in an external pouch, very much in a cavity of the woman body, but not inside of it. So my body, my choice, fine. But the baby is not in your body. Boom! That's like my troll ending for an intro. I might do it. I will see the mood on the debate, and I will see if I have time, because it's not an important point. But it's a nice way to throw a red herring at the end that is not at the heart of my argument, but that I think it's funny. It's funny to consider that, yes, you know, in biology courses, I have learned that the interior of the stomach is considered external to the human body. And so the interior of the uterus also should be. It's a technical argument, but it's a nice one to throw if you can do it fast and if your argument doesn't stand on it. Elon Musk terminates deal to buy Twitter, board to pursue legal action So the Twitter board is adamant. They still want the transaction to occur, and they say they will have it. They will have a court force the transaction. That is very unlikely. What they could have is a court that gives $1 billion to them in principle. That's what the contract allows, but they will have to make an argument. And now Twitter is crashing on the stock market. It was at 39.21 at the beginning of the day, and it fell to 36.81. It's been crashing constantly as the Elon Musk deal seemed more and more unattainable. Black Tie sends a super chat. He says, "JF, why do you insist on pronouncing silent letters in English when French is full of silent letters?" Well, I'm just trying to do the best English that I can. But, you know, a French brain is very hard to shift to English mode. So that's why sometimes you'll see me use H's when there shouldn't be. That's because it's overcorrection. You know, I've been told, "Jeff, you have to concentrate on your H's." And now I put too many H's. I put H's where they shouldn't be. So that's just my brain trying to cope with something that I'll never be able to learn in full because I started speaking English late in my life. English is really a second language for me, a distant one. Although I've come to work in this language and I think I'm okay. Just the fact that I can run a show in English and you guys are not too annoyed, that is almost a miracle. But I'll never catch the full English ways of doing and the full English accent because it happened too late. I didn't learn English at 5 years old or 7 years old. I started speaking English. The first opportunities came, I must have been 10 years old, just some sentences, and then advanced English class at 13, 14, 15. That's too late to truly integrate true English. So I'm just emulating English with an old brain trained fully in French. Ariel Soares says, "Is it due to the stomach acid or the mucus and anything surrounded by it being considered external to our bodies, JF?" Well, it's a matter of cavity thinking. Because you have to understand in development how that matters. We start as basically kind of a worm, then kind of a shrimp. And I know this is being mocked because people say ontology does not embryology does not recapitulate ontology, but it kind of does, and we're kind of shrimp-like at some point, and we're kind of tube-like at some point. So you have to understand how the human body comes to be. It's basically a tube that starts saying, "All right, let's create an inner tube here." And the body is what's between the inner cavity and the outer cavity. The pipe, when you transport water in a pipe, the water is not the pipe. The water may pass through the pipe, and babies may pass through female uterus, but they're not inside the female. Just like water, we wouldn't say that water is part of the pipe. We would say it's in the pipe, because there's a cavity. But if you think about it, when the body develops, really, there's an opening, and this opening is not filled with living cells. It's really an opening of nothingness or of whatever juice the embryo is dipping in. So that's the sense in which we say the stomach is external. Really, the stomach is like a pouch that we carry that contains an environment. And it's the environment rather than the body. John Jay says, "So really then, white people share 4% of DNA with Neanderthals that other races do not share. But what about the lines of DNA that all modern Homo sapiens would share with them? What if white people were, for example, 97% Neanderthal, and black people were only 93. Well, ultimately, it boils down to this. You could arrive at some numbers, but it won't be 93 and 97. Because when we say 4%, we're talking about a handful of letters of DNA that ultimately differ from those those we would call non-Neanderthal and those we would call Neanderthal. So if you really brought it down to a letter-by-letter evaluation, you would conclude, okay, the Neanderthal-ness of white people contributes to 0.01% differences in the total content of DNA. That would boil down to this, because a lot of those other genes that we call non-Neanderthal basically resemble the Neanderthal genes by 97, 98, 99%. So if you boil it down to just the differences, but single letter by single letter, you're going to have extremely small differences. But it's also from a perspective of inheritance. You know, when we say this 4% of the Neanderthal genome, we are talking about a collection of letters of DNA that have stayed together, and we care about the history of this strand of DNA as a whole. We don't care here about the mathematical differences and the quantification of how many letters does it differ by. We care about what is the history of that bout of DNA as opposed to some other bout of DNA. And some of these histories we can trace back to Neanderthals, some we can't. And so that's what we call the Neanderthal portion of DNA. Mark says US abortion rate is crazy. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It is absolute nonsense that we allow so much destruction of human beings, who, by the way, their presence on Earth would not only be a blessing for themselves, they would lead happy lives. Like, of the aborted people, how many of them would actually look at their lives and say it wasn't worth it? 1%, maybe? 99% would say, ah, you know what, we lived a poor life and maybe my mother was insane, but still they'll be happy to live. So I find that absolutely ridiculous that we destroy so many human lives. And by the way, even by the standard of the happiness of the parents, their lives would be improved. Like, they would self-report higher levels of happiness after having had those children, even if they didn't want them. That's just how clear the case is for ending abortion. It's like people don't even know, but it's better for them. And that's a fundamental thing in my life and in my heart, because when I was a kid and I was collecting insects, living insects from around my house, I was also keeping fish alive. I always defined the success of their lives and their happiness. Did they succeed making babies in my little aquarium or my little insectarium? And if they did, they were doing well. I could see it. Mama JF, hello.
Hey, you could use the could use the there you know there's abortion survivors.
Abortion survivors,
Yes,
yes.
you've that
Yes.
because before they made abortion with like salt water or something.
And it was failing.
Yes, and like it, you see the stories, there's like a nurse who found a baby in the garbage bin and he was crying and she just took it.
Absolutely. That's a nice argument. I mean, we know that most people don't regret living, and so that would also be the case for the people who get aborted. They would certainly lead pleasant lives, even if they're poor, you know. Largely, what we're talking about is poor people here. Because it's poor people who end up being impregnated without having had the means or the time or the intelligence level to get the proper birth pill or birth control method. So that's what we're talking about. Poor people are getting killed in those abortion clinic, and it's going to stop in a part of the nation. And by the way, someone who truly wants abortion can always go to a different state. and they will get the abortion. Just make your own state. Make your own state where abortion is legal. And I don't expect that the traveling will be a large obstruction. And if it is an obstruction, then so be it. They're going to have a better life because they're going to have the most important thing to care about in their life, which is a baby. And at the same time, it will help distinguish the state. You know how Florida attracts liberty-loving people? Well, perhaps Democrat states will attract baby-killing women. And I'm happy about it because I'll know not to live in those states. And the average woman in a Republican state will be simply less baby-killing. Mama JF sends me a link. Abortion facts, survivors. Well, thank you, Mama JF. I will not show it on the screen because there are babies there and I don't want to show. And it's like, has the baby been aborted or not aborted? It's not clear from the picture. Pineapple Platypotamus says, Furentes was a test tube baby, just saying, don't murder babies. Really? I didn't know this. A test tube baby, what does that even mean? You say it was conceived using IVF? Interesting. I thought it was a reptilian kind of tendency or, you know, some facial features that were noticeable in Nick Fuentes, but perhaps it is, perhaps it originates from the IVF process, rather than him belonging to a reptilian order. Very interesting. I'm glad that I know this information now. So here's the letter of Elon Musk to the SEC, canceling totally. He says he's unsatisfied with 5 different points. Twitter had said that he would have all of the data that he needs for consuming the transaction, and he's not getting in the data. They're putting caps on his ability to download and analyze the data, and that keeps him from being able to continue. You shouldn't wait forever. Apparently that is a post that may have been posted by the July 4th shooter on Twitter. It's caged on Google because they deleted the account. But the Twitter account was called Home is Gone. And he said, perhaps just before the shooting, you shouldn't wait forever. And he said this using cheap bots done quick. Which I guess is some kind of automated way of tweeting. So perhaps he had scheduled this tweet in advance. You shouldn't wait forever. That was his words before he went on this shooting. Carlos Killface says, JF, I like the argument that Republicans should ban abortion and Dem states should keep it, thus reducing Democrats in the future. It really breaks leftist mind. Oh yeah, we'll certainly talk of the whole eugenic aspect of all this. Very interesting. There are progresses on the decoding of the deciphered book of the July 4th shooter. I'm in contact with a team that has really worked hard, and they have found a full sample of the book. They have scanned it properly, so it's clean. Also, they have copied the whole book to text files, so it's now available in digital format. And they've started the analysis, the kind of analysis I had been doing for a couple of days, but they were able to do it on the full book. It seems that the book contains a lot of repeats, that there are pages that are present 3 times in a row, at 3 different parts of the book sometimes. So it seems that they are on their way with the analysis that they're doing. They're quantifying the triplets, the duets, the single numbers, and they're finding very interesting things. They haven't found a deciphered version yet, I've informed them of my progresses just a couple of minutes before the show began. I informed them of the game Equestria at War and the reference to Arcturus, and they seem very interested. So I'm currently in a Discord where these guys, these elite decipherers, are working. And so I'll be the first, I'll be among the first to know if if they find anything that leads to a successful decipher. They seem very serious to me. Carlos Kilfes says, JF, I like the argument that Republicans... Oh no, this one I read already. Someone wanted me to listen to Philip Glass playing Mad Rush. It's interesting. Not as good as Chopin, in my view. Not as good as Chopin. It's interesting, but it's kind of cheesy and repetitive. But interesting. Today we have seen that Mark says, can you share a link to the Discord? DM me, because I don't know if these guys want the whole general public around. But DM me on Discord. Find the Discord server link is in the description below. I'm open to sharing the link in DM. I just don't know if they want exposure or if they want to work alone. So I'll be happy to bring you in. It's a small Discord server with experts who have been reporting on their progression on Reddit. Shinzo Abe, a Japanese politician, has been killed today. He has been assassinated. We have video of the assassination on Odyssey. Here it is. He gets shot while he does a speech on the streets. The person who shoots him is in the back here and has a makeshift homemade gun that he made with tape and wood, and he fits some black powder in there, and he's made the whole thing electrical with some battery or wires that are coming in to ignite the powder. Quite impressive. But look at the moment where this ex-prime minister gets shot, prime minister of Japan. So apparently he got shot twice, and the first bullet appears to have injured him on the neck slightly, and the second bullet appears to have attained his heart in the chest, and so that's probably how he died. The second shot where we see him fall, it's quite fascinating to see him on the first shot. He seems to have a reaction. I think the bullet may have grazed his skin without necessarily fully penetrating or fully hurting him. And then the second bullet comes and he crumbles to the ground. I don't know what to think about this politician. I didn't know him at all. Mama JF says, lol, why is he making a speech in a ghetto? Well, I think wherever he would have been, he may have been found by this guy, because this guy was targeting him and wanted him dead. I don't know what to think about the politicians, because they say so much contradictory things. They say he was the most globalist prime minister of Japan, and then they also say he was a nationalist. The thing is, the problem is, when they say he's a nationalist and he was pushing for certain things like Japan having its own military, the problem is how nationalistic is that? Because if he's pushing for Japan to have its own military and he's also getting Japan closer to the US, then he basically wants to be integrated to the American hegemonic system of militaries. So I don't know what that means. And I see stuff like this. Shinzo Abe is slash was a fascist, sex slavery apologist, war criminal defender, free speech censorist, refugee human rights denier, propaganda disseminator, far-right, ultra-nationalist, capitalist, imperialistic piece of shit. Enjoy your weekend, everyone. Should I believe this? Because leftists will say these words basically to point to anyone. Was he really a ultra-nationalist? Based, perhaps. Perhaps he was based. But I don't know enough about the man to have a judgment. That being said, one thing I notice is how the leaders of the free world are mourning his death. And this leads me to believe that he was probably one of those puppets that make all countries look the same in Western civilization. That's my first evaluation. When I see the great leaders of this world who are all puppets, when I see them cry and mourn his death today, I see something alarming. John Jay sends a super chat. He says, I see you've been experimenting with different PFPs. Very cute. PFPs. What is a PFP? I don't know what you're referring to, John Jay. You're going to have to give me more details. I do not understand what you're saying. Now, the motivations of the assassin, as they are currently understood, he said, I wanted to kill this ex-prime minister because he was running on some electoral campaign of some kind. He had been the longest running prime minister of Japan, and he had kind of pushed an agenda that was kind of nationalistic looking, but also very much acknowledged as opening Japan to the world and to the international markets and that kind of stuff. But my understanding is that the assassin was, he says he was unsatisfied with him. I was unsatisfied, so I shot him. That's basically what the assassin is saying. But it seems that his motivation is linked to the fact that he had developed a belief that this prime minister of Japan was linked to the Unification Church, a South Korean church that we've talked about on the show before. If I remember correctly, wasn't it Frame Games who brought this moon guy from Korea and presented him as a very rich man, but also a religious leader? So apparently the Unification Church is some Christian Asian church that wants to unify Christianity across the world and that presents a different view of Jesus that is based around forgiveness, specifically forgiveness of debt. was this guy maybe a schizophrenic who created this in his mind, or was Shinzo Abe truly linked to the Unification Church? I have no clue. It's quite funny, although I've been reading about the Unification Church, and it's so funny to see all these Asians trying to be Christian. It's hilarious because they're discussing about Jesus and I'm like, oh my god, I've never realized that there were any Asian who would ever care about Jesus, who would adore Jesus like those Bible people from America. It's quite shocking, but I haven't learned anything about what else could explain the assassination. Here we can. I wanted to show the images of the guy. Look at him. It's the guy with his makeshift gun. This gun is a double-barreled, two-bullet, homemade black powder gun with wires, what appears to be a system of trigger for the wires. This is complex stuff. And the security detail somehow wasn't able to spot this guy whose gun is basically bigger than his waist. Quite fascinating. Quite fascinating. Harold sends $14. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, do you have any thoughts on patrilineal versus matrilineal inheritance? Why do some groups identify more with the father's line while other groups identify more with their mother's line? So I know of two different societies that are slightly more matrilineal or matrilineal or considered more matrilineal. It would be the Native American societies and the Jewish society. They are matrilineal in different ways. You know, in the Jewish world, I think it's mostly the inheritance of the belonging to a religion and the inheritance of the name also sometimes. Whereas in Native Americans' traditional society, the matrilinearity was in association with the place of living. You were basically living in the house of the grandmother. And men would come to inseminate females, and babies of these female lines would remain in the house of the grandmother. And so they would live basically non-nuclear, multiple families, but all related through the grandmother. So why is it that way? And I think a single explanation can explain both cases. I think that the feature that these societies have is a kind of dissociation between the property of the father and the administration of the family. Basically, because the father is often away, in the Jewish world, because the father is involved in commerce or international travel, and in the Native American world, because the man is responsible for hunting, intertribe politics, and war, that means adult males are away. And because they're away, there needs to be a basis of familial linearity that remains in the tribe. And that basis is, of course, the mother. Whereas if you compare with European society. In European society, it was a sedentary farmer lifestyle first and foremost. And when there were campaigns of war, it was like a recruitment of the fathers who would go to protect their family, to protect their land, but it was still their land that they were going out there to protect. Whereas there was not in Native American society the legal tools to ensure that the father would be guaranteed a right of property over those houses. So basically, the male effort in Native American traditional society was collectivized. The whole tribe, the whole males of the tribe were all going to war with the understanding that, yes, they were protecting their females, they were protecting their tribe and their belongings. But that effort was very much collectivized in the sense that when they were coming back, they were not coming back to houses that they owned. They were coming back to, they could see basically their females as a loyal reproductive unit that they are fighting for. In European society, this was enforced by law, by the property, by the contract of marriage and the contract of property belonging to the male. So I guess a combination of sedentary lifestyle and the extent of the sedentariness of society ultimately determines whether it will converge toward a patriarchal or matriarchal system. the more the males are away, the more likely it is that you're going to get matrilinearity. That would be my theory. And when you see some people like David Frum, you know, advocates of the kind of guy who cheered to Justin Trudeau, when you see those people defending Shinzo Abe, I would be very surprised that Shinzo Abe was truly a nationalist in the sense that we mean it. So I have the impression that he was very much an agent of globalism. Shinzo Abe shooting suspect reveals assassination motive. I aimed to kill. Well, this raises a totally new possibility. Well, totally. Homemade firearms, you know, have been scaring leftists for a while, because even if they were to ban firearms, it would be very hard for them to ban the fabrication of a firearm from scratch. And so this raises new alarms and new possibilities in terms of people who have a mission, or they have maybe a delusion, and they take action. Guy from V says he was secret Yakuza boss. Yeah, I mean, this killing totally reminds me of the mafioso nature of Japanese society. That's totally what I see here. All right, and what else did I want to talk about? Wisconsin Supreme Court disallows absentee ballot drop boxes. So they are tightening the rules. Wisconsin's conservative-controlled Supreme Court ruled Friday that absentee ballot drop boxes may be placed only in election offices, and that no other than the voter can return a ballot in person. Interesting, but why is this happening now? Why is this not retroactively applied to past results, I wonder? Here's what's in Biden's executive order on abortion rights. So President Biden has ordered something from the federal government. Basically, they will build abortion clinics at the border of Republican states. Oh my God. Basically, Republican states are being siege, not with military weaponry, but with abortion clinics to sterilize their daughter. I mean, there's nothing in history that looks like this. Normally, if you really have a human conflict, you should have people just go at it, just throw rocks at each other, or if they have gun, you know, make a war, military involvement, shooting the other side, or if they have missiles, go ahead with the missiles. But you have a war developing in America, and it's being done not with catapults, but with abortion clinics. So you're going to have Democrat doctors, educated in liberal university, being at the border of a Republican state so that they can technically respect the law as they sterilize the females of that Republican state. I understand that technically it's legal, but I think it's like the spirit of it is extremely dishonest, because the spirit of it is you shouldn't be taking jurisdictional decisions with respect to a goal that is outside of your jurisdiction. Like, it's none of New York voters' business to fund the sterilization of the daughters of another state, of the right-wingers of a Republican state. And yet it's what we're going to see. Very interesting. It's a case of interstate commerce of some kind, interstate liberties, and how the liberties that are abolished in one state eventually reemerge in other states. So I'm not totally against it. I think this should happen, and it should attract the woman that it attracts. Because in the end, I don't care if genetically unrelated women end up having some abortions. I think it's fine, and it's a kind of dark tourism that should attract the kind of people that deserve to be attracted by it. Carlos Kilfay says, JF, what's your opinion on home-brewed wine? I can make 4 liters of really nice summer wine for less than $1. Are you serious? I didn't know that it was that productive. It was my impression that you have to buy a lot of material, a lot of powders and stuff, but if you're successful at it, I'm super happy for you. Personally, I've been turned off to this because people have been telling me since I'm young that homemade wine tastes like vomit. But I've never tested it, so I have no idea. And certainly, as a PhD in biology, I probably could be able to make a higher quality wine than the average person who recommended me against it. I know a little bit more than these people. Just look at my garden. So, yes, I think I could try. But it's so far in the list of my priorities because, most importantly, I just don't drink alcohol. At this point, I drink alcohol. I do drink alcohol once a month on the Patreon. And it's like one glass of whiskey, sometimes two when the hangout gets long. And so it's not super needed for me. It's not something that I'm motivated at doing. But maybe one day I'll get there. Let me tell you, the day I get to the point of making wine, I will have a 5 meter high barbecue made of stone. Like, and this will just be one of my barbecues and one of my smokers. Because wine is so far down my list that there's no way I will ever get there before I basically have a smoking mountain in my backyard made of rock. Stephen Robinson says, JF, it's in the grapes. The best wine is from the best grape. The shit is from the same. Okay, good to know. Carlos says, JF, you can extract the yeast from the previous batch. Oh, well, sure. There are ways to make this a continuous system, and I would love to learn this before I die. But I'll certainly learn to smoke a full beef before I do that. Much love, everyone. That was it for tonight. Thank you so much for being here, and I will see you all tomorrow. Thank you.